going to be a panel discussion of effective practices in managing trial court budgets in times of declining resources. And I meant to say earlier, as is probably obvious, but in our education meetings, always, these are not action items. We don't vote in the education meetings. They are exactly what they are labeled, education meetings. And so when the panel assembles itself, I'll have them introduce themselves, starting with the moderator.
Good afternoon, Chief and the members of the Judicial Council. My name is Christine Patton, and I am the Regional Administrative Director for the Bay Area Northern Coastal Regional Office, more affectionately known as BANCRO, because the other name is too long. And I have been asked to moderate this great panel of folks that I've known for a long time. I know them all in their professional capacities. And we are going to talk today about how these courts are dealing with the financial problems that we're having in the past years and in the year to come. So before we get started, I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves, starting with Judge O'Malley to my right.
There you go, Judge O'Malley.
From
Contra Costa County Superior Court.
And I wanted to mention Judge Malley is a former PJ of the court and a former chair of the Trial Court Presiding Judges Advisory Committee.
And I'm Kim Turner. I'm the CEO at Marin County Superior Court and the current chair of SEAC.
Dave Rosenberg, presiding judge of the Yolo Superior Court and incoming chair of the Trial Court Presiding Judges Advisory Committee.
And I'm Mike Roddy, the executive officer in San Diego and a member of the Judicial Council. And this is my last meeting, so this may be my committee swan song.
Hi, Alan Carlson, the executive officer in Orange County Superior Court on the council and vice chair of the SEAC group.
Great. Thank you very much. We have about an hour and a half to go over we have some specific directed questions, but then we also want to be sure that everyone in the room has an opportunity to ask questions of the panel members. They're eager to share their experiences and answer your questions. So we will be starting off with questions, but at any time, I think they're willing for you to raise your hand, and we'll all acknowledge you to ask questions instead of waiting to the end. We do want this to be interactive as much as possible. This is a conversation about management in times of economic challenge. We will explore some of the ways the courts have saved money, how they're operationalizing, and every time I put that in my computer, it says, this is not a word, but I think we should make it a word, operationalizing the reductions, looking ahead to life with a shrinking budget, and eliciting ideas on what courts can do this year to prepare yourselves and the public for the future. I'm going to start with Judge O'Malley for the first question, and then we'll just move down the panel and for input on each question, and I may start with someone new just to mix it up a little bit as we go on. We need to keep answers concise to remind the panel so that everyone has an opportunity to be heard and that we can get through our entire list of questions and then have time for comment later. So the first question for Judge O'Malley. When you received the first hint that it was going to be necessary on your watch of making ongoing reductions, what did you do to begin the conversation with your court?
Well, the first hint that we were going to need to be making some pretty drastic reductions came at not only the Trial Court Presiding Judge Executive Committee, but also at the BANCRO meetings. And there is when we had the first hint from, you know, Bill Vickery, Ron Overholt, and Kurt Child about really where the budget stood and really had some really great information about, not great, but thorough information about where we stood on the budget. So all of the PJs at that time really looked at each other and said, okay, everybody's got to get going. Everybody has to have a game plan, and we've got to take this seriously. And so I went back to my court, had a very good discussion with my CEO, and at that point we met with our executive committee and came up with scenarios about different numbers. And at that point, really, we had had a good idea of what the cuts would be, what the percentage of your court would be pro rata, more or less, you know, what the trial court presiding judge or the trial court budget working group had done in the past. So there was enough information there for the courts to really, the PJs, to go back and get going with their executive committees about coming up with scenarios. And we did that. The next important thing was to be able to then relay that to our staff and the rest of our court. And I think we'll talk about that a little bit later. But, you know, first off, it was really knowing that these are going to be permanent cuts. They weren't going to be temporary cuts. We were warned and told as such by Ron and Bill and Kurt. And so really it was going to get the game plan going with your court and the executive committee and your budget folks.
Great. Thank you. Kim.
This one for now. So when we first became aware that the cuts were on the horizon, really it was in the 2008-2009 fiscal years when we first saw the first inkling that it was going to start to get ugly. And so at that time, I went back to my court and met with, of course, the bench. And the PJ and I worked very, very closely together to make sure that we were providing consistent communication not only to the bench but to staff. And we had a series of brown bag lunch meetings with staff, because I cannot stress enough that when you're going into a crisis or heading into a period of difficulty, it's all about communication. It's just communicate, over-communicate, communicate more than you ever thought you would, because the rumor mill is very active. Folks are very, very anxious, and that leads to a lot of inflated conversations about what's going to happen, and you know, someone's idea of what might happen turns into the truth quickly. And so you really have to provide factual, timely, pointed, very direct information. And what I found, even though the materials are, I think, complex, it was important to provide staff with the same materials that judicial council's members were looking at. So the trial court budget working group comes up with a lot of information. There's spreadsheets, there's distillations of all of the recommendations and so forth. And I provided those to staff because it's about being transparent and being able to walk staff through materials that are already the official materials. And so to the extent that you can help your staff kind of get their heads around, well, what does this all look like? How do we contextualize what's happening in Marin to what's happening at the branch to what's happening at the state level? I think all of that really leads to building credibility among your staff and certainly among your judges. I also spent a lot of time educating staff about the budget development process, so the state budget cycle, the whole annual cycle, right from the very beginning, from the fall, submitting BCPs and waiting for the governor's budget in January, and all of the steps thereafter, so that they had some sense of, well, where are we on the path to finding out what the answer is going to be for this year. So it's really important, and I think critical to leading change in an organization, to make sure that you are providing the timely and very direct information to your staff and to the judges. So that's how we handled it in Marin.
Mr. Rosenberg.
Very briefly, this is really hard stuff because, it's not a cookie-cutter thing. It's not one-size-fits-all. At the trial courts, you've got 58 different laboratories out there with 58 different cultures and 58 different ratios and 58 different ways of doing things. But the first thing that we did is try to get a handle on what it is. What are we dealing with? Are we dealing with an elephant, a camel, a cow? What is it? What are the numbers going to look like, and how long is it going to take? Because you have to kind of, you may not understand it, but you have to appreciate economic cycles. So we met with our senior staff. We met with the judges. We also have, year after year, set up committees of staff, because they really know what they can do to save money. You have to ultimately rely on your staff to come up with any idea that will save money. You have to then look at everything. There ultimately can be no sacred cows. Everything has to be on the table. And we'll talk about those everythings a little later. But obviously, everyone has a business plan, and you have to look at your business plan, and you got to make sure that, is it right now? Do we have to change it? Do we have to have a completely different outlook because of the economic situation? So, again, everything's on the table, and we will talk about those everythings as we go on later in the program.
Mike.
It's hard to believe that we've been doing this drill since January of 08. That we're into our fourth year. And I can tell you that when the news first hit in January of 08, it was an immediate stop to a lot of things that we had talked about and had planned on doing, because at that point money was really not the problem. And it's an immediate stop in the case of San Diego to assess the situation, because I think Judge Rosenberg stated it very well. The impacts are different for each court. Unfortunately, we're not at a level playing field. And so, you know, a 3% or a 5% or an 8% reduction affects each court in very, very different ways. We are structured differently. We compensate our employees differently. We operate differently. Some of us have lots of branch courts, and some of us are in one building. And so the first part of the art, and I think it is an art, far more than a science these days, is to try to assess and listen to the council, listen to the legislature, listen to the progress, and then try to communicate that, you know, to your executive staff, to your management staff, to your supervisors, to the line troops, to the judges, to the executive committees. In the case of a large urban court, I mean, there are a lot of interest groups that are very concerned about this. And so how do you translate budgetees into something that is comprehensible to the individual? Because I know in our case, people are very concerned at the individual level about, well, what does this mean to me? And I think we've invested and have a very good system of communicating, in our case, with our employees and our judges, in trying to translate the issues, the need for monitoring this process, because what happens in January may not be what ends up in June or October, as it was last year. So it's very disconcerting to try and keep people in the game as you're going through this very laborious process, because, of course, they all read the newspapers. You mean that was in Colorado? That was the courts in Colorado. It wasn't here in California. You mean that's Orange County, not or L.A. or San Francisco, and not San Diego? And it's a very, very big challenge. But you've got to bring people together. And in our case, we really stopped the wheels and then started to assess what are the options available, because we knew that we were going to have to take something to the bench and ultimately back to the employees to say this is how we're going to meet the challenge. And looking back, that first year was easy in comparison to what we're looking at down the road.
A couple things to add. I agree, and we did a lot of the same things. The very early perception that we had a problem in beginning of 2008, and saying we need to start now dealing with this problem and not hope that it'll go away, in a sense. I think the other thing is, what approach are you going to take to do things? And I'll amplify on what Judge Rosenberg said. Our approach was, right off the top, what can we do differently? What can we stop doing? Turn over every stone. Look at every practice. Those were the first things we were looking at to reduce costs, not furloughs or layoffs or anything like that. First thing was, what can we do differently to save money so we don't have to do those other things? I think the other thing that was big was, this is the fourth recession I've dealt with in my career in courts, but this one had a different flavor to it right away. It was obviously not going to be a 1 or 2 year thing, and that we were not going to be coming back right away. So again, the solutions had to be, we need to do stuff now that's going to work for 4 or 5 years, not 1 year. Because a lot of times in the past, the recession, if you got through a year or two, you were past it. And it was ugly for a year or two, but then it was back to normal, so to speak. That's not happening this time. It didn't look like it was going to happen this time, and boy, is that true. It's so much worse now than it was the first year. But so looking very long range, what can we spend money on now that'll save money down the road? If we change some process now, then we won't need as many people, or it won't cost as much 2 years from now, 3 years from now. Or you change this, it's a permanent saving. It's not a one-time saving. So that was a lot of what our approach that's made a lot of difference since then.
Thanks. Going into the meat of this matter, we're going to spend a little more time on this one, and I'm going to start with Kim here. Share with us specific examples of ways you found to save money from the little things that didn't seem to make much difference, but obviously they add up, to some of the major dollar things.
Okay, well, since there, I don't believe there's a trial court budget out there that isn't spending at least 70% of its appropriation or allocation on staff, you cannot really make significant reductions in your budget without dealing with a staff component. Now, obviously, in a perfect world, what we would do is just freeze the vacancies, discard the vacancies, offer perhaps incentives for people to retire early and so forth. But if you go through that process and you don't get enough dollar reductions, you essentially are at some point going to be looking at layoff. In fact, in my court, we did lay off a few people. Not a lot, but a few. And I think the whole art, if it is an art, to doing layoff is that you really have to get down into your business processes and figure out where you can do things differently and where you can actually have a targeted approach to layoff, such that, I mean, layoff is never easy. It's never pleasant, but it's a fact of budget management, is that eventually if the cuts go deep enough, you're going to staff. So taking a good hard look at what you're doing, I think Judge Rosenberg said, look at your sacred cows. Your sacred cows, this is a hint for everyone, is where you will find that if there is any, little bit of extra padding in your budget, it will be in those sacred cow areas. And so then if you're going to look at sacred cows, you have to enlist the help of your bench to actually make those changes, to make very, very hard, painful, and sometimes emotional choices about how you're going to get through through this crisis.
Kim, do you have any specific examples? And I know you do because you... Talk to me about them.
Yes. So, for example, in Marin, we used to have a one court reporter to one judge ratio. And I think there are many courts that still operate like that. That is it's not a very efficient way to operate. As you know, if the department is dark, the court reporter may have nothing to do but is still on the books and is being paid and so forth. So we actually went through a process of consolidating our court reporters, laying some of them off, pooling them, and now and using them in a very different way than we ever have before. And we've been able to cut the number of court reporters in my court in half. And by doing so, have saved $850,000 in my small court. So it's a big reduction, but it's a painful, painful cultural change. And so that's, I guess, what I'm talking about, having to really, really enlist the support of your bench. They have to get on board with a change like that, because who does it affect but our judges and the departments and these legal cultures that have grown up in our communities for many, many years. So that's certainly one thing you need to focus on, is the staff side of the house. But then there are many things that you can do on the technology side, as Alan said, about looking at spending money today because it will produce savings down the road. And you need to do that return on investment kind of analysis. For example, switching your phone system from the old digital phone system to a voice over IP system. You have to spend dollars today to do it, but you save an enormous amount of money down the road. I mean, every year you're saving, hundreds of thousands of dollars on a phone system after you make the initial investment. So we did things like that. We virtualized our servers. We got our HVAC system to be small. You do a lot of retooling of your technology such that you try to make it as efficient and as sort of cost neutral on your environment as possible. And as Chris said, and I really want to focus, I think, mostly on the small things. We have a small court in Marin, or small medium court. The place where you find a lot of your savings is in the small things, and you can't disregard the small things. So getting rid of juror lunches, it seems like such a small thing. It's only a few thousand dollars a year. But if you take a whole host of small incremental moves, change a process, eliminate a sacred cow kind of a service, change your website, get rid of paper libraries and go electronic, all of those things, over time they add up. And what we ended up with in Marin was really $3 million worth of savings from doing a whole host of small things and a few rather major things that have really paid benefits to the court, so that in a year like this one, we're not in horrific shape as some courts are.
Thank you. Judge Rosenberg.
Well, if I can just pick up from that, I think ultimately, once you understand the scope of the problem, you really have to do some thinking and planning, and then develop what, for lack of a better term, I call a toolbox of possibilities. And they get more and more draconian as you get into the toolbox, I suppose. Some of the easy items at the get-go is you know, getting rid of Post-its, things of that nature, getting rid of coffee. But the toolbox can have 100 different items depending on how far you need to go and how much money you need to ultimately save and cut. In terms of sacred cows, you can't institutionalize things that may go away. I think some courts have fallen into that trap. You get a grant, you get some money, and you do it because it's a wonderful program. It's really a great program. It does wonderful things in the community and for the court. But when the grant stops or the money is cut off, some courts continue to find ways to fund that, and you can't do that. When the money stops, you have to stop the program, even though it's a great program, because the money's got to come from somewhere. So we had a situation like that in Yolo, where we got a 3-year grant for a unified family court, which was a wonderful thing, but we stopped it when the fund stopped. We didn't find other ways to fund it. You've got to look at all possible ways of splitting from the county. There are still many courts that receive many, many services from the county, and I would submit in most cases it's going to be a very expensive way to go, all the way from phone service to you name it, payroll, custodial. So if you split from the county, put it out to some sort of process, courts can save money. We found one way to save a remarkable amount of money is the voluntary time off. I'm confident a lot of courts are looking at that or have done it. It's a way of employees stepping up and helping. And some employees actually like it. They don't get paid, but they get time off. And so that program saved $106,000 last year and $150,000 the year before. Not insubstantial for a court of our size. People sign up for it. They volunteer to do it. Other ideas, the obvious ones, are freezing vacant positions. It's not the most intelligent way to go, because sometimes you have to freeze positions that are pretty darn important. But it's a way to go that has less human impact on people that are good, loyal employees of the court. So when a position becomes vacant, you freeze it. And if you need to fill it, you put in a temporary hire, a 1-year hire, as opposed to a permanent hire. You can change your office hours. In other words, the clerk's office is now only going to be open 4 hours or 5 hours or 6 hours a day instead of 7 or 7.5 or 8. It doesn't necessarily save that much money, but it allows your shorthanded staff to redirect themselves to do the work that otherwise would stack up. Some of the more draconian ways you can save money are obviously eliminating commissioner and referee positions. It truly is a draconian way of saving money, but it does save a substantial amount of money. You can terminate leased property. That creates its own set of problems, but that's one way to go. Ultimately, furloughs. We have tried rolling furloughs, which have little impact on the public. In other words, you don't close down the courthouse 1 day a month or 2 days a month, whatever. You close some courtrooms so that there's always courtrooms open as far as the public's concerned, but some are closed on any given day, and so you furlough people on those days. And rolling furloughs save money but have the least amount of impact on the public. There are ways to, of course, renegotiate contracts with unions. Reorganization plans can save a substantial amount of money, though those can be time-consuming to develop. And one thing we have done that seems to be pretty effective is we don't necessarily give golden handshakes, but we provide cash money. to people who retire early. That's a far less expensive way of going than a golden handshake. And there's also a program called OPEB, CalPERS Retirement Health Benefits, that we took money from our funds and put it into that trust so that we would be funded for the next 10 years into that program. That's, again, taking money off the top, spending money now to save money over the next few years. So those are just, you know, some ideas of specifics.
Thanks.
Judge Rosenberg?
Yes.
In the regards to all of what you talked about, was there a process you went through to inform your judges and to keep them appraised of what was going on and then to get buy-in from them? I mean, some of them are drastic changes.
Thank you. That's. I'm not saying we implemented all those. Those are all programs that are in our toolbox. Some were implemented, some could be implemented, depending on the scope of the cuts. But what we do in YOLO is we meet with the judges every month. We keep them fully informed of what's coming or what could be coming. And equally as important, the CEO meets with all employees. We have the whole gamut of employees come together, and the CEO is completely and totally honest with the employees about what's happening and what could be happening. We don't want people to be surprised or shocked. Everyone needs to understand the scope and the nature of the problem. And because they can ultimately be a big part of the solution.
Thanks. Mike, anything to add?
Yeah, many of the same things. And I think what may be illustrative of what courts have done is, you know, the court execs have a listserv and we're sharing ideas. And there's some real common themes. I mean, you're typically looking at your non-personnel expenses first. You're looking at books and publications. You're looking at contracts, services and supplies, technology, infrastructure, any of the non-people things that you can shuffle, reorganize, reduce, so that when you get to that point, and in our case, personnel is 82% of the budget. There's not a lot left over once you strip some of those things out. And again, we're 4 years into this, so the low-hanging fruit, as we call it, was done early on. You know, we went after books. We put in the voice-over IP system, saved over $1 million a year. You know, we bought new servers to replace the old servers that run better, faster, cheaper. But as we go through this and it continues on, and I think Alan's point was well taken, this is not like the earlier downturns that many of us in court administration have experienced. It's longer, deeper, and far more traumatic, that we're getting now to the things that are going to start touching courtrooms, and I don't know how to avoid that. I mean, closing the clerk's business office at 3:30 instead of 4:30 definitely affects the public. It definitely hurts access. But when your staff vacancy rate is doubled or tripled, it's the only way you're going to be able to get the work done in a reasonable fashion. I mean, in our court, we scaled back the workforce. We found the delays becoming intolerable. I'm getting letters every week from attorneys about how it takes 9 months to get a default judgment processed because we've got a 24% vacancy rate in the civil business office. And we've been able to dig our way out of that, and here we're going to come into next year essentially losing those gains again because we're going to have to go back and strip that workforce down. We're looking at, you know, furloughs in the future if things don't change. We've done the voluntary time off. We've squeezed just about everything you can squeeze in that regard. But I think we're at a point where now 4 years into it, there's not much left in books and publications. I mean, we went to our executive committee on Monday. We can save $538,000 this year. We've got an $11 million hole to deal with. It's going to take a lot of books and publications to get to that $11 million figure. And so we're going to be upping the vacancy rate potentially. We're going to be looking at, you know, going back to the employees and talking about voluntary time off programs. And so far we've done everything possible not to hit the courtroom, not to hit the judge. But I think we're running out of those easy solutions. And all of those have been talked about by the prior panel members.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little later about looking forward to next year. Alan, do you have anything to add for this year?
Yeah, the one thing I would add is our court went through what we called a business process reengineering effort beginning in January of 2009, and it's ongoing. We involved 135 or 40 of staff, more than 10% of our operations division, the first time around on 17 teams, and it was they're the ones turning over the rocks. Our saying was, if you want to know how to do something more efficiently, ask the people who do it every day. So we put together the teams of the people that do it every day and came up with huge savings, long-term, permanent kinds of things. The first list, we called them quick wins. We had 113 things that we implemented immediately because it didn't cost anything. And it was things like stop using certified mail when you don't need to. You get mail back, keep it for a little while, and then throw it away. We used to log the mail that was returned. You don't need to log the mail that was returned. So a lot of little things like that. But then also looking at the bigger things that you could do. And, you know, every journey begins from where you are. And our court was in a really advantageous position regarding this. Because of V3 and because of the document management system we had and the scanning that we were doing with the imaging, we were able to move very quickly to take advantage of that to really reduce some of our costs. So we've gone paperless. We prefer calling it paper on demand. If you want it, we'll print it out for you. We are completely paperless in civil. Small claims to complex, no paper files anywhere, gone. When you give us a document, we scan it within a day, and we stick it in a box, and 90 days later, we shred it. Never go look at it again. Everybody's operating off the paper, the judges, the law clerks, the courtroom clerks, the staff, the public. Everybody's running off the electronic version of things, no paper. Just major civil downtown in one courtroom, that was 12 people, so that's about $1 million right there. We have now moved into family, and we're pretty much done with going paperless in family. Next, we'll do traffic. Every one of those is a permanent savings of a fairly substantial amount. We also had another concept. We call it, we want you to be online, not in line. We borrowed the saying from somebody. It wasn't ours. We'll do anything to get people to be able to do stuff over the Internet or over telephones rather than having to come to the courthouse. They don't come to the courthouse. They're not standing in line. They're not going through security. They're not standing at counters, and you don't need humans to interact with them. So you can pay your fines, get continuances of dates, schedule hearing dates, all either by telephone, IVR, no human involved, or on the Internet through our system. If you want copies of documents, you want copies of your divorce judgment, you can get that stuff electronically. You don't have to come into the courthouse. Divorce, you have to, but all the civil stuff's available online. Nobody has to come down and get it. You can dial in, find your case, pick the document, give us a credit card number, done. We have something we call the magic mail machine. Riverside had it. San Bernardino had it. LA had it. They were using it for jurors. We use it for fine payments. You get your courtesy notice. You send us a check or you write your credit card number on the piece of paper you send back to us. The only human intervention is the human stack the envelopes on the end of this machine, and the human pulls the stuff out of the inside of the envelope when it's opened and sets it down in a platen. The machine reads it. If it's a check, it goes out, takes the money from the person's checking account, goes and put it in our checking account, updates our case management system, and does the distribution without being touched by human hands.
That's the name Magic.
Magic, yeah, that's the magic mail machine part. So we've linked all these things together. It costs us some money to do this. We had to have a case management system that could handle this, but we did, so we took advantage of it. That was four people right off the top on opening mail and keeping track of that stuff, and it's being done faster because the machine goes faster than we did on opening mail and logging it in. I could go on. We have hundreds, literally, of things that we've done like this. We prepackage all our criminal cases. If somebody comes in with a new filing, we check to see if they have any other misdemeanors, infractions, or felonies. If they do, all those get pulled together for the next hearing, all in the same place before the same judge. And not surprisingly, you can take care of a lot of stuff all at once when you do that. We built a courtroom in the jail so that all the first appearances are in the jail now instead of in a courtroom on the edge of the jail, so to speak. No more busing for those. I think 40% of our misdemeanors are resolved at the first appearance. We do have lawyers there, including public defenders. We don't start till 10 o'clock, so the lawyers can come in early and talk to people and see if we can get some dispositions. And we go till 7 or 8 whenever the calendar's done. All those things save money, and they all save money permanently, and we're not done yet. We still have lists of things we're going to do, the ELFs, the family law paperless, traffic paperless, those sorts of things. And then there were a lot of the little things. I'll add to what we did. We took away everybody's cell phones. Nobody's got court-paid cell phones. We took away business cards and letterhead. We don't print business cards and letterhead. There's a generic version for the judge, And the rest of us, if we want more, we do buy our own. Or if you want letterheads, we've got macros in Word. You don't print letterheads. Let the printer do that when it comes out. So you can do a lot of little things like that. First year, we pitted Westlaw and Lexis against each other. Who'll give us the best deal on legal research? Pick one. That was it. Saved us $500,000, I think, the first year, and then ongoing kind of stuff. So we've done a lot of things like that. The other interesting thing, our retirement system allows us to prepay. So we can pay, I think this year we paid 75% of the year's total expected amount in September. And we get like 5% reduction on the rate for the whole year. So that's 5% of whatever our bill is. Well, our bill is millions of dollars a year for our court. So that's just money off the top because we can do that. So we've turned over everything, as I say, and we're not done yet. No furloughs, no layoffs, no closing hours. We actually provide more service now than we provided in 2008, particularly because of the IVR and the web-type services. That's not to say when we get, and I'm jumping ahead a little, when we get to next year, if it's as big a cut as it is, the way we say it is the cliff we're going off isn't going to be as big as other people's cliffs. But at some point, we're down to where that's it. Now we have to stop doing things, close, lay people off, have backlogs. You know, we just haven't hit it yet. That's all.
Judge O'Malley, anything that happens? Oh, question?
I have a question. The five of you are from obviously very successful courts in this difficult time. Have there been programs or efforts to share these great ideas with less fortunate courts who haven't been as successful, like workshops where you share these ideas?
Certainly we do share them on the listservs that we've talked about, but we also try to, you know, talk about them, among our groups, either at the regional meetings or at the SEAC mm-hmm. meetings. I think the PJs do something similar. So, there's a big effort afoot to try to share the good ideas that are coming out of, all of our various efforts. And, what works in Marin may not work in Orange, but it may, generate some piece of it may be useful. So, as Alan was talking, as Mike was talking, I was, making a few little mental notes, try this, think about that. You learn something every time you talk to your colleagues because it's a very dynamic kind of a process.
Hopefully what we're doing right now will reach a lot of people who might not have been able to be present at those regional meetings, where a lot of this discussion does take place in at the SEAC and the presiding judge meetings.
I mean, I could even see bringing CEOs into San Francisco here for a workshop on how you achieve better success in financial management.
I know that, my CEO and staff has been contacted by numerous other courts also, and I'm sure that people do that. Call around and say, what are you doing and how did you do this? And I heard that you have a proposition that helps bring in income to the court. And so I know that the courts themselves are very helpful to each other in that regard.
Speaking only for PJs, I made reference earlier in my remarks in the prior section. I do intend that our PJ meetings have specific times set aside for the PJs to share, for lack of a better term, best practices with each other. And I'm very hopeful that the PJs and the CEOs at our regional meetings can have specific time in workshops to do the same. Obviously, some ideas are unique, but many of the concepts, like changing phone systems, can apply to almost everyone.
Judge, I think the court executives are particularly aggressive in sharing because plagiarism is rampant around the branch.
And there's a lot of competition.
There's tons of competition, yeah.
Tell me that's not true.
And but I might go further than just sharing amongst ourselves. I think, for me particularly, number one, my goal is to stay ahead of the curve, and I need information to do that. I have no problem picking up the phone and calling somebody at the AOC, calling a fellow court executive, talking to the PJ to talk to another fellow PJ, whatever it takes, because information is power. And if I can get a head start on what's coming down the road, or if I know we're going to make a left turn instead of a right turn, that's the way you stay ahead of the game. And I think Alan referenced that before. Is you've got to be out in front of this. If you're reactionary, it's too late. It's too late. I mean, my job is to prevent layoffs. Mm-hmm. We've not done layoffs. Really? I don't want to use the L word. So
I feel like I have this duty to do whatever it takes to stay ahead of the curve, to stay ahead of the knowledge front, to find out what's happening in Sacramento. And I think it extends beyond just talking to folks in your own circle.
Yeah, Kim. Yeah.
I also wanted to say, in response to what you said, Judge Moss, about getting the CEOs together and having some kind of a workshop, is that not at this council meeting tomorrow, but by October, SEAC will be delivering on the promise that the chief asked us to do back in April, which is to develop and to hopefully launch, bring forward as a recommendation, a trial court business process reengineering program that would be rolled out, with the council's blessing to all of the courts, and it would be a voluntary program in which CEOs and their line staff and managers and whoever else they think is, you know, is really a champion of this kind of an idea would be able to attend a number of small regional meetings up and down the state of California to learn how to use the analytical tools, a number of templates that Jody Patel and her staff have put together to really sort of bring this effort forward and to get it going in courts where they maybe haven't done a lot of that kind of work so far. So I think that that's going to be one of our really emerging strategies for how the courts and hopefully the branch is going to deal with, I think, what the train that's coming down the track in the next year or so.
I think the other part, it's happened on a smaller scale. I took six or eight managers up at Riverside, and we sat together with those folks to say, oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? We've heard about this. We've heard about that. The magic mail idea, that was a Riverside. San Bernardino had them first. We just took it the next step farther. We've had, offhand, I can think of three visits in the last 3 or 4 months of courts coming down and saying, either literally coming down or on the phone saying, how'd you do this? Yeah, I don't think they came down, but Contra Costa called us. Fresno came down to see us. We want to see this, this, and this that we've heard about, and we're happy to do that stuff. And always, I can't think of a time we haven't come away with something. Wait a minute, what are they doing? That? How do we do that? You know that. And you do. You get a competition. We're all. We've been at this for a while, but you know. What do you mean Riverside's ahead of me on how to do their website? I want to do
competitive.
That.
Competitive.
So it happens.
Judge Smith?
Yes. Well, speaking of plagiarism and picking up the telephone, our court is facing some issues and have made a decision to lay off court reporters and pool and share court reporters. And so I picked up the phone and called Kim. And our courts are very different sizes. But one of the things that was very helpful for us is that she was able to forward a number of documents and things that they had already reviewed, notices, some suggested steps that we could take. That was very helpful in getting moving in our budget response. And it also helped me as chair of civil to organize the civil judges to talk about what we might be facing and how we might respond to it. So there is a great power of sharing information, and it doesn't matter what size court you are because Marin's very small, Alameda is big. We can't do it the same way they did it, but we can certainly adapt some of their ideas. And I would say that some of the research with respect to what was required, what steps we had to take, some of it had already been done, so that I was able to pass that information on to our CEO, our presiding judge, and to our judges, which has helped us move forward probably faster than we might have otherwise been able to move forward.
And one of those places that you can go if you're not sure who else has done these things is to call your regional director, because that, I think Jody, Margie, and I, we get these calls. And as I got the call from Alameda, we're thinking of doing this. Where do we start? And I said, call Kim. And I know that our OGC had worked with Kim on the document. So that's the way we can help get you together and match up in some of these informal ways. And then in addition to the formal structure we're going to have for reengineering and workshops and the presiding judges, et cetera.
Just a
few. Do you have anything to add?
Just very few, because obviously this panel knows what they're talking about. In our county, we have different branch courts, and so some of the branch courts had different contracts with, some of the suppliers to get good services and that sort of thing, and it might have been from pre-consolidation still going on. And so what we did is we got together all those contracts and really consolidated all those and got a much better deal from, one entity, such as copiers, suppliers, things like that. And so we really saved a lot of money easily, and the copiers alone, $100,000 a year. So just a simple little contract of consolidation, and that was kind of our mantra this last year or so, is consolidate, consolidate, consolidate. And where we had vacancies, obviously somebody has to pick up the work of the employee who's vacant or that position, and so you would have to consolidate workers. And then if we found out, well, that worked very well, maybe we can eliminate that position, then that was something that you could do, and that would save you, obviously, a lot of money without having to lay off somebody. Now, we did have layoffs in my court, but again, prior to doing that, you really try and do the voluntary time off. You do the consolidation to see if you can take those retirements, which we had a number of retirements, and really trying to see if you really needed that position or if somebody else, if somebody could share that duty and or that assignment, if that could work. And so that was very helpful. Also, some courts, not all courts, have kind of like I would call a fleet of cars. We found out that we had many more cars than we really needed. And so we sold some of the cars, and we were able to save money by really reducing our fleet, which it's not really a fleet, but, you know, 12 cars,
one car is not a fleet.
12 cars, you know, down to three or four, really. And it's kind of the same thing with the cell phones. You know, we also got rid of our, we consolidated many leases that we had throughout the county. We remodeled, so we spent money to remodel a particular space and consolidated everybody into that space, cutting down on all those leases and saved us hundreds of thousands of dollars annually. And so that was really a great thing to look at and to do. And then you just have to restructure kind of the way that you do business with our custodial. You know, you had to kind of switch up the hours and be able to kind of spread it out a little bit more, and everybody has to kind of make do. And so, again, so many great ideas, but there are ways to do it, and but yet we have more to come.
Now, before we get to the more to come, and everything that you've mentioned, some of the small things, I know when I was talking to Kim about reducing the judges' libraries from one library per judge to a shared library. That was a sacred cow. It was difficult. She had to get that there. Some of the other things on the even janitorial, okay, we're not going to be emptying your waste baskets every night. It'll be every other night, or vacuuming once a month instead of, et cetera. Some of these issues up to the very, very sensitive issues of court reporters. So starting from the question.
Let me just add one thing.
Go ahead.
On the court reporters, we did a hybrid. So, you know, there's a court reporter assigned to a department, but if that department is dark, that court reporter floats immediately and goes out to wherever is needed. Or if a court is on vacation or gone that day, then that court reporter is assigned out. So it's kind of a hybrid of not necessarily starting in the pool, but absolutely available, on call, no ifs, ands, or buts, goes out. Everybody knows it. Everybody pitches in. And so it's kind of a hybrid of that, which is working.
And that can save you money in not having to hire in your pro temps there. And so we want to – did you have another comment on that?
Everyone has to understand, I'm sure you do, that there are effects with everything you do. And, for example, we have a similar thing with court reporters. They're sort of a pool. And we live on the edge every day with court reporters. We've had many occasions when we need help. And a judge is available. A clerk is available. We get the interpreter, find a bailiff, and we don't have a court reporter, because we've used the last one in the pool that day, and we don't want to spend the money to go hire a private reporting service. So, you know, those are the effects that will happen when you live on the edge.
Okay. So sort of touching on the question one and then what was already asked of Judge Rosenberg, so now you've got these great ideas. You're working on how did you get buy-in? How do you get buy-in from your judges on some of these sacred cows and your staff that are now having to deal with a different process, paper on demand? Not all the judges probably are thrilled with that, and certainly with court reporter and other issues. So how did you go about, Alan, I'll start with you, on getting your buy-in?
We mentioned a couple things already in terms of telling people what's going on and being honest with them and getting the information out there. In addition to the things people have already said, set up a deal very early on, and now I do it whenever there's a major thing, a budget comes out, the final budget gets adopted. I literally go out and talk to all the staff, and we have 9 locations. So I just go to every place at lunchtime, half the people could come to one session, the other half the other time at lunch, and everybody gets the same message. This last time we took out all the management team so that they knew who they were, and everybody talked about the things that we've done to achieve the state that we're in now in that sense. As I said, the business process reengineering we did, we involved the people who do the work to find the problems. We sent out a request saying, everybody tell us anything you can think of, rule, statute, whatever, that would save money. It's interesting how you just ask people for that kind of input. I got back, I think, 130 or 40 ideas, and when you culled out the duplicates and then you go through them, we've talked about this, oops, we can already do that. Somebody didn't know that. We came up with what we call the 100 ways. If you count the list, there aren't 100 on the list. It's a little less than that, but we rounded up. But that kind of involvement, participation, the talks that I do, we always videotape one of them, and our intranet on the website, every time I've spoken, there's an intranet out there, and you can go see it anytime you want. So if people missed it, they can still go and watch it, kind of a thing. I think another thing that was big for our court was when we had the furloughs a couple of years ago, our judges were very good about participating. And there, in our court, most of the judges gave the money back to the court. They kind of wrote a check to the court, so to speak. I think we raised, I can't remember exactly, I think it was $700,000 or $800,000 that the judges gave back to the court. That was a powerful message to the employees that we're all in this together. The other thing we did, I said we didn't do any layoffs. Okay, we did five. Three were on a project that ended, so we just ended their employment when the project ended. The other two that we laid off were my chief deputy and the secretary. And that was the first ones we laid off because I wanted to send a message that this was not something that was going to only impact the people downstairs, that we started with my deputy being laid off, and that gave the message about how serious this was and how long-term this was. And it worked. We have very good morale right now, all things considered. I mean, it's not great, but it's good.
May I ask a question about that? Because amongst the sacred cows that I was thinking about were management, because, of course, layoffs, attrition, et cetera, it's always the lower-level employees. And one of the common refrains I hear is the ratios are getting out of whack. In other words, the staff is disappearing, but there's too many managers. So have any of you had to, other than to lay off your chief, address the question of middle management and reorganization or say goodbye to folks in that regard?
We went right to upper management first, and we laid off some people in very high positions who were close to retirement and were able to make those so, you know, they were able to leave in a comfortable manner. But it started at the top, and we didn't go to the you know, the people behind the counters for a year after that until we had to try everything else. So, again, it's the message that you send. We also had the judges contribute their voluntary salary waivers back to the court. So it was very important that staff knew that this was a very serious matter and that everybody was going to take part in this, and we started with management.
Well, in Marin, we also started with management, and what we did is we let the employees know that we were going to flatten the organization. And when I came to the court, there was a CEO, two assistant CEOs, eight managers, 11 supervisors. Now there's a CEO, seven managers, or five managers and seven supervisors, and that's it. It's a very flat organization. So you have to do that. As Alan said, as Judge O'Malley just said, you have to set the tone at the top, and you have to say, we're not just going to go lay off every file clerk while the rest of us sit around, you know, in our complacency during this budget time. So I think making sure that you have a flatter organization also enables someone like me, who used to be a little bit insulated from what's going on in the operations. Now I have an operations meeting every single week with all the managers, and I get to hear what's the problem in the clerk's office, what's happening in courtroom J. You know, all of that stuff comes to me so that I'm really able to keep my finger on the pulse of what's going on. And obviously I'm a small enough court to be able to do that, but I think it's really important to do that.
You've got to pay attention, because particularly when you get to the table, that becomes an issue for the labor unions. Having recently run the numbers, while our clerical vacancy rate overall is 15%, on the management side it's 19% from where we started, and on the supervisorial side it's about 17%. Mm-hmm. My span of control is bigger. I'm now the CFO and the CEO. And so we've taken every opportunity from executive management on down, because if the perception, I mean, in fact, I have a bigger problem when I go out and hire a family court mediator, because it's a 16-week wait for mediation than worrying about whether I've got too many managers. In some units, we had three and four managers. We've got one. And we're going to continue that drive, because we've always got to do more. But and unfortunately for some, it's still not enough. I mean, there's still a major concern about you've got too much management. But I will put our numbers up head-to-head with what we've done across the board, because everyone has shared in the pain.
Yeah. Is there anyone else on the panel that wants to add to what they did with their staff and judges on the buy-in?
Yeah. We had what you call staff chats. When I was presiding judge, my CEO and I went out to every single branch court, and we went out with our budget. We made them handouts, and we showed everybody what the numbers were. They were the honest, cold, hard numbers. We also enlisted each of the employees to email anonymously or put your name on it, any idea whatsoever that you had to save the court money. And, of course, this was after we'd already made the cut to upper management, and so they knew that we were very serious. We got lots and lots of great ideas. We put those ideas in a newsletter so that every other employee could see those ideas posted out in front of everybody, and then that encouraged more people to come forward with great ideas. So not only did you get the ideas, you acknowledged the ideas and you praised the ideas, and then if one was instituted, you know, we had a nice collared Contra Costa County shirt that we were able to give out, you know, to people who were we actually able to institute some of those great ideas. But the staff chats were absolutely critical, and to every branch. And we had some people who was so successful that not everybody could make it. They asked us to go back for seconds, you know, staff chats to certain branch locations, which we were more than happy to do. As the budget progressed and as we learned more and more, we would go back. So every time there was an update, every time it looked like it was going to be more or it was going to change, we went back and updated them. And the staff chats were attended very well, and the word would go out from that. And so it was a great way to really keep everybody informed and to let them know what we were looking at. And people felt involved to the point where they could participate and help. And it was really, again, you know, our feeling around the court is as positive as it can be, given the nature of the way that we've gone through this process.
Anything to add? Okay, I want to ask the next any questions here.
I know that your focus is on the trial courts, but I was just wondering if you know, are any of the appellate court executives participating in any kind of a similar process?
We can ask.
Well, I'd say yes, because we're so much smaller. I think there's much more communication between the appellate courts. We don't have a records management system, which is, you know, is one of the things that's been delayed because of IS problems, and that's really holding us back right now.
Thank you. Okay, we'll be sure to get that, and I think Chad is in the audience here, and he can certainly get that more into what the appellate courts are doing. Thank you.
I just wanted to say that if any of the clerks of the appellate courts want to be, you know, on our listserv, come to our meetings, be part of that, you know, it really, I think, helps to energize the clerks to hear what's happening in the trial court. So that's an open invitation from SEAC for any of those folks to join our efforts and to try to, you know, hitch on to what's already going on.
Yeah,
in the
we
courts.
Do invite the clerks to all of our and the judges and the justices to all of our regional meetings. Also, thank you. We're going to switch gears a little bit and just very quickly for anyone on the panel who wants to share. Have you done anything or thinking of doing anything to bring in more revenue on the other side besides the cut on the revenue side? Anyone want to start?
Kim.
Kim?
I'll start. So one of the things that we're trying to do is to focus on receivables. Courts don't have very many receivables, but once in a while we have fees for service, like probate investigator fees, or there's a new program for juvenile dependency collections. And so we're trying to put a lot of attention into making sure that where we provide services for which we can charge, that we're actually following up and getting those services to be compensated. So a little more attention on that. I think it's something government is not really used to doing. Certainly the courts until recent years were not used to doing, but it can actually pay off. We brought about $100,000 more last year than we had the year before in probate investigator fees, just because we're paying attention to it. In addition to that, I really encourage CEOs and managers and whatever to take a look at the practices in your clerk's offices. We found in Marin, for example, that we were shortchanging ourselves on motion fees because the practice in Marin was an attorney would come in with a pleading that had three or four motions in it, and the clerk would charge $40 for a motion fee. Well, the charge should have been $160 for four motion fees. So in just paying attention to that, we've determined that we were shortchanging ourselves by about 30 to 35% of the motion fee revenue that we should be bringing in every year. And that motion fee revenue goes right back to the courts. It goes to the trial court trust fund. So, you know, that's one example, but I'm sure there are other examples of just paying attention to what's happening on the ground. Also making sure that for fee waivers, prevailing party is the fee waiver party, there's an opportunity to go back to that party and collect the fees that were foregone at the beginning of the filing process. I think one of the things that we all have to be aware of is that we really have to focus a lot of attention on our collection efforts. The enhanced collection program that Jessica Sonora at the AOC is staffing and managing is an important way, it's a critical way for the courts to get more involved in fee collection. We have to be more aggressive about fee collection. I think we have to communicate more with our bench about letting them know the consequences of not, you know, levying the fees, ordering the fees and the monetary sanctions, and letting so many of our defendants, you know, convert to either community service work or jail time when they have the ability to pay. So that's an area that we've focused a lot more attention on, and I think we're accordingly generating more revenue now.
The collections, I'm sorry, Kim.
Go ahead.
The collections are huge, and we were in-house on all of our collections, and we weren't collecting anything. I mean, our collections unit was just really there biding their time and really not bringing in anything. So we went to a vendor, and now it's well worth more than worth the money that we're paying out to the vendor because that's what they do. And then we can use those that were in our collections unit to do something else that they're more interested in working for the court. So it's really worth your time to look at your collections process and how effective you are and how efficient you are. And for us, we weren't. And so we needed to go out of house. And now it's well worth it. We're bringing in far more money. A lot of courts now have started a process of civil assessments. And so I encourage any court that hasn't started a civil assessment program to contact another court who has. Get the paperwork, get the procedure, get the process, and learn that civil assessment program because that will bring revenues into your court. That in any fines and fees that you can that are owed for the work that you are doing. Really, you at this point in time, we can't let that be bygones anymore. We need to be active and take part in that. So I think as far as bringing in revenue, that's where you really have to be very diligent.
Any questions?
I mentioned the magic mail machine. That's a collections thing. And I mentioned people can pay by IVR, the telephone, or over the Internet. A couple other things we've done is we've now set up a process so that you can set up if you owe $100 and you want to pay $10 a month, we take it out of your credit card automatically every month. You don't even have to write us a check or remember to do it. We've got something called a predictive dialer system where, and we haven't got it hooked up to the collections yet, that's coming any time now, where the system knows from the case management system that you're supposed to be sending a check-in for a certain amount, so it calls you up and reminds you to send a check-in for this amount. We actually started using it with our mediators to remind people about their mediation appointments, like your dentist does or your doctor or whatever. It was a great, that was a side benefit. We didn't anticipate that. The other thing we're looking at is, so if you don't have a bank account and you're on a cash basis, you can't use IVR, you can't use the web. So we've been exploring, there are a couple of outlets, Western Union kind of things, and apparently one of the Target or Walmart or something like that, where people can go into the there, give the cash to those people, and they'll send us the money electronically. So we're finding more ways for those people that aren't paying right now to make it as easy as possible for them to pay, and it makes a difference.
Credit card machines, Apple Windows. Boy, mm-hmm. What a difference right. That made.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Paid in full and paid right then.
And just one other thing that doesn't generate revenue, but it really defrays cost, is a lot of our courts are still pretty married in their practice to their counties. We all hearken back to the days when the court was just a county department. And the courts are still doing things on behalf of other county departments for free, doing all kinds of services, providing courtesy copies of pleadings, copying all the juror questionnaires, all kinds of things that are in local practice, are not in statute, are not in rules of court, are simply the way we've always done business. So we're going through a process of really challenging each and every one of those things and trying to reassign the work back to the department, the DA or the probation department or the PD, that should have been doing that work all along, but because of, the way things were, the very collegial environment, we did it for them. It made sense when all the money was county general fund. It does not make sense anymore for us to do things that we're not being compensated for.
Great, Justice Chief.
It does sound like a lot of great ideas, and I'm not sure, only otherwise, if there are clearinghouse, if there are way of someplace where all these ideas are listed, so if someone call in, a new PK, call in and find out what's being done in the court.
We do have, as we mentioned earlier, a listserv that the court execs use, and we would certainly be happy to share the whole list of good ideas that are out there, things that courts are already doing, things that courts are planning to do. Also, Jody's group is really a clearinghouse for any business process reengineering ideas or plans or tools or templates. And so one of the things that I'll be bringing back to you, Chief, in October when we kind of roll out the trial court business process reengineering program initiative recommendations is a fully formed, I hope, program that will describe all the ways that PJs and CEOs can get information and provide information so that we keep the conversation really going.
We have, Jody has compiled that listserv from the court execs, and so we do have that list that I think can get out to everyone. Justice Spector.
I know that the 5th Appellate District received a CLEPS award this year, I think two of them, and based on efficiencies that they had developed. And I recall at one of our prior, it must have been an educational meeting or issues meeting, this idea of, especially in difficult economic times, the appropriateness of having a CLEPS award based on economies that are developed within the trial courts. Traditionally, they're based on expanding services. So I don't know whether there's a conscious effort to integrate what's going on here with the CLEPS Awards concept at least the ability to retrieve information from other counties.
So part of the trial court business process reengineering proposal will include an awards type program to really recognize and acknowledge courts that are doing the hard work and are achieving efficiencies and savings and what have you. And so that's one of the ideas that we'll be bringing forward, is to perhaps at every council meeting highlight some court that's reengineered their traffic division and they're saving tons of money and the public is better served and so forth, and to be able to really, kudos to those courts that are doing the hard work. So it wouldn't be as formalized as the CLEPS process. It wouldn't have a committee that goes out to the courts and, looks at what they're doing and so forth. We haven't quite figured out all the logistics of the program, but we really want to keep trial court business process reengineering in the forefront of our message for the year. We're reinventing the courts, we're reinventing the branch, and so forth. And so to the extent that we can use, you know, some kind of a positive incentive like that, we think it'll be very helpful.
Right, but Alan, didn't the money machine, the magic machine, did that win Eclipse this year?
Yeah, but not for us.
I think San Bernardino started it.
Yeah.
Justice Hill.
Thank you. The reference a moment ago by Justice Baxter to the 5th Appellate District brings to mind that we're talking here this afternoon about trial court savings, but there can be appellate court savings and ideas also. And I'm wondering, I don't know if that would be a task that would be beyond, you know, the sharing of information among the trial courts. But, for instance, we had our librarian just in the last, 60 days, sent a message around saying that for those of us who could do without currently upgraded Westlaw codes in our chambers, that we could save about $8,500 a year, and we have 10 justices. The governor hasn't filled the chief's position yet, so there's $85,000 there. Now, talk about getting judges to buy into the idea of not having their books immediately available is a bit of a trick, but I did finally decide that made a lot of sense to me, as long as they didn't actually take the books out of my chambers, because they bring me comfort.
And so, even if they're old.
So we have sort of a hybrid. We're saving the money, but at least, you know, you still feel like you've got something you can put in your hands. So anyway,
I think it's a good idea to share, to get those together. So it's not just the trial courts and the appellate courts need to be part of that, and I think we'll work on that with them. Judge Davis, did you have a comment?
Oh, thank you, Chris. All I was going to say was it was indeed, as Alan Carlson indicated a moment ago, our court, San Bernardino Superior Court, that this year won a CLEPS Award for the Magic Money Machine. And while I can certainly understand appreciate concerns that in these times we might not or might want to revisit whether CLEPS awards ought to be going to these sorts of areas, I can tell you, in courts like mine, where we have historically struggled, oftentimes feeling that we are fighting a never-ending uphill struggle with increased filings, increased workloads, lessened staff support, not the judges that we need, as everyone on the various panels today has alluded to. I wish I could express to all of you how proud the members of my court were and the staff that attended the CLEPS Award presentation. And Mr. Overholt had been here a few moments ago, and I'm sure he would echo those sentiments. These are innovations that are being created from the minds of those that are in the trenches, having to do the work day in and day out. And giving them the recognition that we do by way of a CLEPS Award, I think, is so deserved. And one of the comments that was made during that presentation ceremony was how not only has our court been contacted by a number of surrounding courts and courts out of state with respect to the Magic Money Machine, but how our executive team has already gone feet forward to contact neighboring courts to offer their assistance with regard to this. So I think that encouraging this sort of recognition for the sort of innovation deserving of CLEPS awards is something that we really ought to think long and hard about before we ever decide it's something that ought to be somehow eliminated or perhaps to move elsewhere, because nothing puts a smile on the staff of court personnel other than having AOC directors and assistant directors present with the court executive officer. And I again want to thank the Judicial Council and the Chief Justice for allowing us to have the court executive officer that we do.
You're welcome.
To have all of the smiles on all of the faces present, because they recognize that on a statewide level, people are giving them credit for being so innovative. It means a great deal to them.
I don't think you're going to be able to get a Klecks Award for getting your new CEO, though.
Yeah. Thank you very much. We only have about 15 minutes left, so I want to turn it over to the panel on we've talked about things that they've – oh, I'm sorry. Fritz?
And I apologize for coming in late and heard a lot of good news here today, but there are a lot of courts that aren't here today. And I haven't heard a lot of good news from a lot of courts recently. And I'm just wondering, how do we know that when a court comes and says, we have to be funded by this much more, how do we know they've done anything? Is there some way we should be evaluating that? Should that be in the mix of our deliberation as to how we help?
That's the next
panel. I believe
panel.
That's the next your next subject next matter panel. After us. Thank you, Fritz. Segue into asking the folks here. We have certainly are hoping to achieve some restoration of funding next year. That is, I know the chief is already on that. You know, Ron, Kurt, everyone, we're focused in all of your efforts to get some restoration of funding next year. But even so, we're likely looking at ongoing reductions and the long term, change in the way we do business. So just out to the panel, what is your court doing to plan for the transition to the new reality? And as Alan had suggested, how are you making the cliff ledge not so steep? Judge Rosenberg, you want to start with that?
Well, it's a process that I know many courts, hopefully most courts, have been thinking about and working on for years. It's the toolbox that I made reference to. It comes by any other number of names, but we have this checklist of options that get more and more serious and draconian as you go down the list. And ultimately ends with layoffs and court closures and furloughs. But, you know, I hope and trust all courts are developing this checklist and are squeezing the orange as much as possible. But I must say that, for what it's worth, the legislature and the governor have got to provide, in my opinion, an adequate level of funding for the judicial branch to do its job. We are a constitutional branch, and we have to have a certain amount of money. Now, if the legislature tomorrow decided we're going to cut the judicial branch budget by 90%, could they constitutionally do that? And at what point are they cutting the budget so much that we cannot do the job we're charged to do? That's a question for another day. But for now, we just have to develop the toolbox and have the tools available to us, depending on what the situation looks like. I talked about the economic cycles. I think we're in quite an economic trough. I don't know what the economists are saying these days, but the last I heard is they are thinking we're going to come out of it in another 2 years.
Unemployment's 12%.
Yeah, California's in you know, everything is ultimately driven by jobs, mm-hmm. and it's all cyclical in terms of you got to have the people buying, which creates the need for manufacturing, which creates the need for jobs, et cetera, but ultimately it's driven by jobs, and California is certainly hurting.
You know, in preparation for today, I did a little math this morning. And if we use 07-08 as kind of the pinnacle of our funding, that was the year before we got to start getting the bad news. This year in my court, we've taken a little over a 9% hit in what we expect our state allocation to be. And all the things we've talked about today have, I think, put us in a good position to deal with that 9%. We've restructured the wage base. We've gone after employee retirement contributions. And that's just the things that we've all talked about. Next year, if we don't do something, from that 07-08 base, the number goes to over 25%. I got to tell you, layoffs and furloughs and closing the business at 3 o'clock isn't going to cut it. And we've had this conversation with our bench. This week we had a meeting with our executive committee, and the numbers are truly daunting. And I give credit to our bench because, you know, our executive committee has said, you know, we've got to deal with some structural issues here. We can no longer do it on the administrative side of the house. The numbers that have started to appear, I really think, tell the tale. The book budget isn't going to cut it. Putting in voice over IP system, it's been done. And so fundamentally, I think I share some of Judge Rosenberg's concerns about at what point does it become, in essence, potentially a constitutional issue. When you go for a 22% reduction over kind of the high point of our funding, that's truly significant. And you can't do it on the backs of the clerks in the business office. And you can't do it on the backs of the management staff because there just aren't enough there to do that. So I think that's something the council obviously knows and is going to have to wrestle with. I guess, Fritz, in answer to your question, because since I'm departing, I can venture the answer, I guess. I don't think there is a checklist that we can apply to get to the answer of whether a court has taken all the necessary steps, because there is no unanimity, in my opinion, about what those necessary steps are. In one court, it could be we're going to eliminate the use of court reporters in family law and civil, and in another court, that is absolutely not going to happen on this planet. Each culture has a different set of priorities. In one culture, it may be two clerks to a courtroom, which for some might seem, you know, wow, rich. And in others, it might be a judicial secretary for every judge. And I'm just throwing out some examples. So I don't think there's an easy answer to the question of how do you assess from a checklist. You almost have to get in and dig into the books, dig into the culture, dig into what's been done. And that's a very laborious effort. And so I think we need to be cautious about generalized assessments, and there's no easy way to get there.
Alan, we have about 7 minutes left.
Yeah.
I didn't think there was.
Yeah. I totally agree about the point. We reached a point at one about October last year where I had to tell a clerk that couldn't go on vacation because I'd run out of clerks. That's too low. We can't be down that low. We've added clerks since then. So, yeah, where do we hit the point where, okay, that now it's fundamental, it's constitutional, whatever. I don't know where that point is. We may find out next year the way things are set up now. I want to mention some other tools about the toolbox notion. I didn't mention earlier we're driving e-filing as hard as we can. I don't know, Mark, and we've seen this. I'm out pounding on the lawyers saying, you want to help our budget problems, e-file. Round numbers, if you give me a document, I have to scan and do data entry. It's 15 minutes worth of work for my clerks. If you send it in e-filing, it's maybe 5 minutes, probably less, to review it. And then it automatically goes into the system, and it's literally available on the Internet within minutes. We're at 20% documents e-filed. Obviously, I'd like to get up to 70 or 80% in civil, and then I'm working on the criminal folks doing theirs and that kind of stuff. Smart forms. How many of you spend time in family law looking at a form and the person's left off a few boxes, maybe unintentionally, maybe intentionally? You can't read the numbers. You don't know what it means. Smart forms, it comes in clean. They can't print it out and give it to you until it's done and everything's there that has to be there. The numbers add up the way they're supposed to add up. So we've got a huge project going with that. What we do is available to everybody in the state, the forms and the processes. We're looking for e-filing from our police officers and CHP. There's three courts, Santa Clara and us, and I can't remember who the other ones, San Bernardino or Riverside is. I get 500,000 tickets a year from CHP manually, and I have to data enter those. I want that stuff coming in electronically. It'll be cleaner, less problems, less rejects, and save me money. So anything we can do to get stuff in electronically and keep it electronically. I tease Fritz, I want to send my stuff to the appellate court and to the Supreme Court electronically. I don't want to print out paper and number it. I want to give them a disk. Death penalties in particular. We can do that now in our system because everything's electronic. But I have to print them out right now to go to the Court of Appeal. We gave our local Court of Appeal access to our civil records. So there's no more of calling us up and saying, we need to look at this. This didn't get included. We now think we need it. They can just dial it up and get it themselves. We showed them how to do it. We gave them access. So those kinds of things, e-service as opposed to e-filing. I don't want to pay for a notice. I don't want to pay my clerks to prepare a notice. At the end of a thing when we've got a tentative ruling, I want them to push a button and it gets sent electronically to the lawyer. And No mail, no waste of time. It happens faster. The predictive dialing I mentioned, all those things, they're tools. And each one's not by itself going to solve the problem, but hopefully cumulatively we're closer. But at some point, I agree, we're at the cliff, so to speak.
Judge O'Malley.
So we had, at the beginning of last year, probably 440 clerical staff. And through attrition and vacancies, layoffs, we're down 93 positions. Mm-hmm. Our filings are stacked up in feet, 12 cubic feet to get through filings that come in through the court every day. We've done, instituted all that we can. I would dream to e-file and to e-this and e-that. My IT program is so antiquated in Contra Costa County, we're e-horrible. So we don't have the luxury of being able to do that, and I'm anxiously waiting for CCMS to be complete and getting into that as soon as I can, because I know it's going to save me money in a program that I can barely afford to pay for now every year. So what does this mean next year? I mean, we've been responsible. We've done everything. We took these cuts as permanent. So we really started from day one making the appropriate changes in the way that we operate for our court from day one. So now, given the cuts that we're looking at for next year, it means that services, and I don't mean clerk's offices, I mean services to the public, are going to have to be cut. We're going to have to stop doing certain types of cases, small claims, limited civil. We're going to have to really scale back on our unlimited, departments. We're going to have to probably, well, that's a given, eliminate, we've already done that, our night court. Eliminate any collaborative courts that are just, aren't taking the numbers like we need them to. And just further reduce hours of the clerk's office because we need that personnel because we're down so far to be able to take care of the backlog so we don't have to pay for overtime. So it really, at this point, it's going to be, as Judge Rosenberg calls it, draconian. I mean, services and access to the public are going to be drastically affected next year if we're faced with the same situation.
Mark.
Yes, I'd like to ask this, and I think I know the answer, but whether it's 58 courts are doing this or 30 courts are doing this, it seems to me that the stories that we're hearing here today ought to be told to the governor and to the legislature and really the public. I mean, this message is not out there for the average person like me that is not part of what's going on in the courthouses. And I'm telling you, that message needs to be told to the people that are in charge in Sacramento, because it seems like the courts are bending over backwards to cut at every level, and I don't think the public really understands that, and certainly the legislature does. I don't know what's going to happen here, but if something we're considering in the future is communication to Sacramento, a group like this might be a way to start.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Kim, did you have one final
comment, and that is I think the courts this year and certainly into next year are going to face a big structural challenge, and that is the analogy I use is that the tabletop, which I call the judges, the funded judicial positions, remains the same regardless of what the reductions are. But the court staff continues to diminish, so the legs of the table are getting shorter and shorter and shorter. The tabletop is the same, but, it started as a dining room table. Now it's a coffee table heading for the floor. So we have to get to the point where we look at that, the sort of the disconnect between judicial positions and staff to support those departments, because as Alan has said, as Mike has said, as Judge O'Malley has said, and as Judge Rosenberg has said, we are going to face a constitutional crisis when we no longer have an adequate number of staff to support the work that judges are supposed to be doing. And so that is, I think, something that's looming on the horizon. If we do have 15% cuts next year, and it will translate into layoffs, I think, in every one of our 58 courts, there will be courts that simply do not have the manpower the human resources to actually support those departments.
I know Bill has something to say, but I appreciate that comment, and I appreciate what Mark said, because I will say since the beginning of this year when we looked at a $200 million cut, I know Kurt, I know Donna, I know Bill, I know Ron, myself. I also know a group of attorneys were in the Capitol explaining what this meant, but no one could hear it. There was too much other noise going on about the judicial branch that wasn't about our budget. So there was a group of people really fighting about our budget, and our voice got drowned out, and it wasn't covered in the papers. And we also know, and many of you came to coming together to find a way to backfill some of that $200 million. And we worked on that, and then we were hit with another $150 million. And while that was going on, we were really facing two arguments on two battles. And this was clearly the big argument. It was clearly the budget. But that got drowned out in all of the other noise that existed out there about the branch. And I would point out that, in my view, that other noise that sort of created the din that took away the focus of the branch also undercut our ability to hold the line on the budget
Absolutely.
Cuts.
Yes. Absolutely.
Agreed.
It was just more of a reason to cut us. For whatever reason, we can't agree, so we deserve to be cut. Unbelievable. Joe.
I just had two comments, and Kim, maybe for you and our board executive team, I went back and started pulling out our problems from the past budget problems we had, both in the early 90s when that went on for, you know, close to 5 years, and then about 5 years with the dot-com crisis when we went through the dot-com and the energy crisis. And many of you did a great job on the both what the courts were doing to save money, but also what the impact was, that creeping impact on the public, and whether it was waiting in lines, not getting protective orders, being able to gain access, and a whole variety of things, what the human toll was on the other end of this. And I think as we prepare for the discussions in the fall and then later on in the year about the branch, in addition to the point that Mark raises about getting this information out about what the courts are doing to try to stay open, but I think it would help if we could start now trying to get that more difficult information about what's the people impact on these things. And the other thing that I think is we work on the budget management side, the chief in trying to prepare for the budget discussions that need to take place early in the fall, that meetings with last week with a group of our leaders from the legal community, primarily in the Bay Area, but with representatives from Southern California today. There was a second meeting with a group primarily from Southern California, but with representatives from the northern area of the state, and in the discussions to try to see that the bar leadership organizes to effectively support us with the message that needs to go forward to the governor. But I think Judge Rosenberg, from the presiding judges, and then from our court executives, we need to do the same thing that we're asking of the bar, and that's to have everybody on message, on the same message. We can't be competing with each other if we're going to compete with the limited resources that the state has to try to have some type of a plan to keep our courts open and to try to see that we begin to restore, not 100%, but a portion of this funding, so that we don't, while we have to prepare to go over the cliff, we ought to do everything we can, obviously, to not go over the cliff. And that, but that won't happen if we aren't all together on a common message, and we've got to be ready to go for the chief to be able to go forward to meet with the governor by mid-October, again, before things get set in place for the actions for next year.
Yes. What we did prior was a survey, and Steve Nash helped us kind of gather up a survey, and we sent it out to all the presiding judges and the CEOs, and they completed basically what the scenarios would be if you were hit with a certain amount of cuts, and I think we're ripe to be able to do that again. I think that the scenarios now will be much different and much more devastating than they were a couple years ago when we put that together, but
right. Our
dearly departed Steve Nash might still have, you know, or the staff would still have our template you know, of the survey that we put out that we did, Dave, a couple years ago.
One of the ironies that we face is, and I'm not defending the legislature, but they have many challenges many constituencies out there calling for help in these difficult economic times. One of the challenges we face as a branch is, and it's an irony, the more effective we are in keeping our courts open and backfilling and making do and cutting so that we are open, the more tendency there may exist in the legislature to say, well, you know, they can do it. They can cover it. That wasn't so bad. So that's the irony and the ultimate challenge we face in really convincing the legislature and the governor that these are serious cuts. And, you know, we don't want to close courtrooms, but we may be forced into that position.
Well, the last economic downturn in 2002 and 2003, an extremely effective approach, and I don't know if we can get there given where we've been this last period of time, as we had two legislators who were very supportive of our branch, Joe Dunn and Dick Ackerman, both from Orange County. And they actually held hearings throughout the state in which all of the branch stakeholders, employees, litigants, legal services, and local bar presidents and representatives, state bar representatives, trial lawyers, defense lawyers, all pushed through the hearing process the impact of cuts on the courts. And if there would be any way to push that coalition together, it would be an effective approach.
Well, you'll be happy to know that Joe Dunn from the state bar is heading up. The state bar is taking a major role in bringing together the attorney groups for addressing a statewide solution to the budget issue.
That's good to know.
And that did include hearings, I remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's been discussed, actually.
Yeah, it did. Meeting. There were hearings throughout the state.
Yeah. Right.
Great.
So, there's anything more from the group? I want to thank the panel.
I just wanted to thank all of you for participating in our open education meeting and for your candid comments. I thought it was wonderful and very. I believe it will be very informative for the trial courts and those who listened in.
Absolutely. So
thank you.
Thank you. This concludes the educational meeting of the Judicial Council of California, August 25th. The council will reconvene for its public business meeting tomorrow morning at 8:30.